Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:47 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is September 8th. I thought it would kick off with China Evergrande. It was actually up in here today, but we've had a profound decline. And one of the things I think is particularly relevant is not simply that there is a default risk. I still think that because the size of the potential problem is so large, that it's quite likely that there's going to be some form of intervention on behalf of the Chinese government, which supports the view that we're at the bottom of the credit cycle. But then the bigger question is, will that assistance arrive before or after a bankruptcy? With the significant decline in the share price, it's worth considering that when we think about the Shanghai Property Index, well, it's been quite steady. So China Evergrande is not a constituent of this index. So it also helps to highlight the fact that there is some evidence of some support coming through for other portions of the property market, just not China Evergrande. And when we look at the Hong Kong properties, the Hang Seng properties market, well, it is also the China Evergrande isn't a member of this index either, but it is back in the region of the sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 18 months and beginning to steady, although certainly needs to do more in order to really be convincing that support is coming through here in a more dynamic manner. The one index where we certainly have a presence by China Evergrande is in the high yield, or the Chinese high yield bond index. And I'll show this on just a line chart. So it was at a marginal new reaction low in here today. I did a little bit of work on the constituents, and I think these are the most important statistics. China Evergrande represents about 2.35% of the index overall. So that's not especially worrying. But the fact that the index is made up of bonds by real estate developers, and that occupies 67% of the index. So there are other portions of the market. There's aerospace, which is only 0.16% of the index. And even if we look at some of the building and the building construction, and of course there's obviously a lot of cross-dependency between property developers and building construction companies, and yet these don't represent an awfully large weighting. But there are lots and lots of real estate companies and lots of real estate bonds within this index. So China Evergrande itself doesn't represent an especially big risk any longer because the bonds have already fallen so much already. The bigger risk is in terms of contagion. So if China Evergrande has to sell assets and other companies get into trouble and they also have to sell assets, well, that's obviously going to be a daisy chain effect, and it's a potential problem for the wider high yield sector. But I still think that because the size of the problem is so profoundly large, then the potential for significant money printing on behalf of the Chinese government has to remain the base case. So we had a rebound on the stock market yesterday, but it was in negative territory in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. And when we look at this over the last couple of years on a weekly basis, well, we're right in the region of the trend mean, and we're starting to see at least some evidence of steadying. And it's also right in the region of the peak from back in 2015, so it's not terribly surprising to see some pause and consolidation in this area. But the bigger picture here is that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the Chinese market because they think that the government is going to intervene. Of course, there isn't. It's never a surety until it eventually happens. And the challenge right now is that the common prosperity way of thinking that's been introduced, and some people are calling it a second cultural revolution, and they're not getting a lot of airplay. But a lot of people in China have been fearful of a second cultural revolution since Xi Jinping took power. And the, I think, processional or procedural way in which all these different measures have been introduced over the course of the last few years, everything from the sterilization of the Uyghur population to the Belt and Road Initiative, to the clampdown on just joke apps because people were communicating in a subversive way, according to the government. And now the fact that they've moved into corporations, and that's been going on for years. So all of these factors, what I find really quite interesting is that investors continue to be attracted to the Chinese market because of the potential gains. And this is obviously still going on, and investors are still willing to jump to the defense of investing in China because there is another way of thinking about it, that they are simply regulating the technology sector. And that perhaps they might even be doing a better job of that than the USA is doing. But the bigger point, of course, from a logical perspective, is you can't make money unless there's respect for minority shareholder interests. And it's very difficult to have your case heard unless there's an independent judiciary. And no one is ever going to hear of the plight of minority shareholders unless there's an independent and free press. And China has none of those things. So the government gets to rule by fiat. So there's a reason why Chinese shares tend to trade on lower valuations. It's the exact same reason that Russian shares tend to trade on lower valuations. And then it also suggests that it's in extreme oversold conditions that that's when the best opportunities arise. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't trading opportunities, and certainly we've had extremely large pullbacks in some of the technology companies. So it is reasonable to conclude, and a lot of hedge funds have concluded, that the worst is over for companies like Alibaba when it's down 50% already. But certainly it has to hold the $150 area in order to confirm that this is in fact the low and not a low. Now, when we then look at the wider economy and think about the kinds of instruments that are dependent on China, well, copper prices continue to pause in the region of the all-time peak, and we're a little softer in here today. So we've had a rebound from the region of the trend mean, and now it's starting to roll over a little. But certainly, if it can hold the $4 area, that would certainly be rather benign overall. Obviously, China is a major consumer of oil, and oil prices remain well bid. And this looks like a pretty orderly little consolidation around the $70 area. We've had extraordinary acceleration in natural gas prices in the UK in particular, and that is putting upward pressure on electricity prices, and the price has been going up in just an incredibly swift manner. And it might continue for a while longer, but these kinds of accelerations do not last indefinitely. And US natural gas prices are also pushing on the upside. And we're up in a dynamic manner as well in here today, and now clearing the $4 area in a dynamic manner, and at a high that hasn't been seen since 2014. So we are certainly seeing a very significant move in natural gas prices. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline, they've, I think they welded the last part of it through yesterday or the day before. Gazprom, they want to start sending gas through it at the beginning of October. So the share is breaking out right now, and it's overbought in the short term. So I don't think it's unlikely that we're going to see at least some pause in consolidation here. But this is a major coup for Russia, that they get to circumvent most of Eastern Europe and get their gas directly into their biggest customer, Germany. But it also means that supply of gas will increase, and it might be enough to start to ease some of the near-term pressure on the European gas price. And that should also help to mitigate some of the inflationary pressures. Upward pressure on electricity prices is something that every household experiences, and it falls most heavily on poorer people. So it directly feeds through into the experience of inflationary pressures. So any kind of easing that we have there will certainly be welcome from the perspective of large numbers of people. Now, when we think about some of the beneficiaries of rising natural gas prices, well, Australia is certainly one of those. Now, the stock market index remains in a very consistent upward pattern overall. And there's obviously then we still have this merger that's going through between Santos and Oil Search. And we haven't yet seen the price of Santos start to reflect the market opportunity, and not least because it's a rather expensive proposition, this merger. But the price is beginning to steady around the $6 area. And if LNG prices continue to do well, because it's not simply about Europe, and there is this incredible drought in Brazil. And I thought this was a particularly interesting graph. It's rainfall at actual rainfall at Brazilian hydro facilities. And you can see that generally it's at the beginning of the year that we get a lot of the rainfall occurs, and that just hasn't been happening to any real measurable extent since 2018. So we're now in 4 years of a drought, and the surges in supply of new water have been declining steadily, and certainly the peaks are lower all the way through from about 2016 onwards. So Brazil is importing a lot more gas, and that's feeding through into inflationary pressures there as well. So we have both these pressures on our increasing sources of new demand for LNG. We have the Nord Stream pipeline coming through from Russia, so that should help to mitigate some of the supply pressures in Europe. But it's not going to do anything to slow down demand for gas internationally. So then we can also think about Brazil as a major commodity producer in its own right. And the stock market index has now pulled back below the trend mean. We can at least lay some of the responsibility for that at the feet of the Delta variant, but then there's also the fact that the Brazilian real weakened pretty substantially in here today. And we do need to see that in the context of the longer term trend, where we've had this range being put in between 5 and 6 over the course of the last 18 months. Was looking like it could have broken lower and suggested that the real was capable of strengthening, but it has not done so. And we've had a sequence of higher reaction lows over the last 3 months. So the potential now is that we're going to see the real weaken back towards the 6 level. So there are certainly some challenges within the emerging markets universe. And obviously, the dollar being reasonably firm is another significant portion of that. International investors generally want to have the currency and the stock market and the yield on their favor. And right now, it's a little bit touch and go on just exactly what the dollar is going to do. It was up yesterday and a little bit steadier again in here today, and it's firming from the region of the trend mean. So that's at least against the euro. When we think about it in the Asia dollar index terms, then we've also seen an upward dynamic and a break in the short-term sequence here. So Asian currencies are doing a bit better overall, but it was yesterday weak and weaker again today. So we have the potential, at least, that Asian currencies can do better, but not a great deal of evidence to suggest that it's going to happen in a dynamic manner in the near term. There's also this big question about Bitcoin and Tether, and which is a stable coin. So a stable coin, in simple terms, is that they try to hold the value of the cryptocurrency Tether in line with, in a one-for-one manner, against the US dollar. And to do that, they have reserves that attempt to back it up one for one. But of course, in order to maintain the peg, without a sovereign ability to tax, they need to pull a yield from somewhere. And what they've been doing is investing in commercial paper, and about half of the reserves are in commercial paper. And of course, the highest yielding commercial paper is in some of those Chinese property developers because they're starved for cash. So that also helps to highlight where some of the risks exist from an unruly bankruptcy issue in China, that it could well have been part of the reason why we had the pullback on the cryptocurrencies yesterday. It wasn't perhaps all because of the botched rollout of crypto wallets in El Salvador. Bitcoin was in negative territory today, but it was well off its lows. And the fact that we have a significant divergence between the performance of Bitcoin and Ethereum is, I think, worth highlighting, because Ethereum was up today, so bouncing from yesterday's low. So that's reasonably encouraging and suggests that perhaps we're going to get some consolidation here in the region of the previous peak. But this divergence is also suggestive of perhaps that the issue was more to do with Bitcoin than the wider market, and it still has a leash effect on the rest of the market. Now, when we think about the stock market right now, well, we're approaching the middle of the month. There has been speculation, and I've certainly been thinking about what the scope is for another little wobble, that as we approach the middle of the month, as options expire, so that, and traders know this, and they've been actively shorting into this event over the course of the last 4 months. We've had pullbacks in the order of a couple of percent, and not more than 5% since October of last year. And most particularly in the middle of the month over the last 4 months. And this kind of repeatable event is the kind of thing that automatic systems will try to take advantage of. Of course, they'll also be looking to buy the dip, and we've seen that every time the dip has been bought, it has pushed on to new high ground. So there is certainly the potential that as we approach the middle of the month, we'll have another pop on the upside in terms of the VIX, that it may get up towards the 20 area, and or maybe even the 25 area, and then start to come back down again. And arguably, since this is such a well-known event, then there is the potential, at least, that the VIX may not go quite as high on this occasion, and that the dip buying might happen a little bit earlier. So there's certainly the potential that markets are primed for an acceleration, and that sufficiently large numbers of people have been making money, and that the prevailing environment is of extraordinary bullishness. I was at a football game. One thing that has been I think a revelation for us since moving to Texas is just how social an event the high school football games are. And my daughter and her classmates wanted to go to one last Friday. And I don't think they spent a minute watching the game. But the reality is that I was sitting down next to one of the other parents, and he was telling me about a friend of his who has turned 300,000 into 1.9 million, mostly by investing in cryptocurrencies, and that he's going to give him a couple of $100,000 to invest on his behalf and to trade for him. And these kinds of conversations, I haven't had them before. So, and in fact, the last time I remember anything even remotely close to this kind of speculative activity was in 2006 and 7, where there was a lot of money to be made from trading. And then I was really not old enough to be trading during the 1990s, but I do remember being in college and that a couple of guys that were in the rowing club were speaking to venture capitalists when they were still in their third year because they were doing e-commerce degrees. And there was a lot of speculative interest in new ideas from young people that could be turned into potentially an IPO. So we're certainly in that kind of environment now, and there's a lot of money still floating around. And there's certainly we've had an economic revival, but there's still a lot of uncertainties. And because of the uncertainty, then there isn't quite the same appetite among bond or between, excuse me, among central banks for aggressive tightening. We certainly have some tapering, but even in places like Australia, which led the way in terms of tapering, or Canada, there's the scope that they'll just slow down their taper. And economic growth is going to moderate. It just can't grow at such a fast pace indefinitely. But that also suggests that we're going to have a benign liquidity environment for the foreseeable future. And if we really are at the trough in the Chinese credit cycle, well, then that also should supply additional liquidity. So that's beneficial for stocks. And we might be having a short-term pause, but the Nasdaq is still trending higher in an aggressively consistent manner. And we still have ranges one above another, and it's continuing to find support in the region of the trend mean, in fact, above the trend mean during pullbacks. So until we see it sustaining a move below the trend mean, then this is still the bull market overall. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.